The New York Giants defense is about as shaky as a 500-pound man sitting on a chair with a half-broken leg. Can you say timber? And Major League umpiring is about as wrong as an individual closing their eyes and taking an SAT test. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my fresh, as we bring you all new episode of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, August 26, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And for all you newcomers, you can catch up on previous tapings of the show as well. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. L-L-O-Y-D. Be sure to hit that follow button. And as always, if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on future shows, you can always send them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Another great show for you today, listeners. We're going to talk some more NFL preseason football as the Jets and the Giants have completed week 3 of their preseason schedule. They have one more game to go. We're going to touch up on that. We're going to talk about Andrew Luck, as Andrew Luck certainly retired from the game of football. Our thoughts on that. We're going to talk some baseball as the Mets and Yankees are winding down their season and moving forward to possibly a playoff push. We want to talk about the MLB umpires. They keep on screwing things up. What should Major League Baseball do about it? And listeners, we're going to touch up on some other topics as well. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports with Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I've actually been able to benefit from this Mets long homestand and stay in Flushing. I've been able to stay home in Queens following the Mets this week.
Listen, I'm sure you're happy about that, to avoid all the jet lag and all that other nonsense that you go through for the most part, Mad Mike. But before we talk some football, which we're going to get to the second half of the show, I want to talk about the USA men's basketball team, Mad Mike, who lost to Australia. And it was the first game in nearly 13 years that USA basketball team, it's a 13-year dominance in an international men's basketball game. It came to a shocking crash on Saturday when Team USA suffered its first defeat since 2006. At the hands of Australia, Mad Mike. And I don't even think Australia is better than Spain. Okay? And the Aussies rallied to pull off the 98-94 upset in front of 52,000 people during the World Cup exhibition game in Melbourne, snapping American men's 78-game win streak in a major international tournament of exhibitions, Mad Mike. It was the first time the Australians had ever beaten the USA basketball team. And USA is currently number one in the International Basketball Federation, which is FIBA, listeners. Okay, they have ranked number one, which to no surprise. But because many of the top NBA basketball stars have opted out of playing this summer, including LeBron James, James Harden, Steph Curry, obviously this is not a strong team at all, Mad Mike. Not a strong team. And the last time the Americans counting major international tournaments and exhibitions, all right, with NBA players on the floor, lost the game was the semifinals in 2006. All right, and the program has won gold medal in every competition since, including three straight in the Olympics and two consecutive World Cup titles. Now, I'm not saying that they're not going to win a World Cup title, Matt Mike, but this has to be quite alarming. It's alarming to me. I'm sure it's alarming to you. And I will say that international basketball, obviously, we have more international basketball players in the NBA more so now than ever before. So the international game is picking up. But there's no way in the world you can tell me that even with that being said, that USA should take an L.
Of course they should. Of course they should. Because here's the thing. And this is why I don't respect a lot of the NBA superstars. Because the NBA, we're here and you're having a conversation about is the best of the best, right? Team USA is supposed to be the best the USA has to offer. The same way Team Serbia is the best Team Serbia has to offer. Australia, etc. We're supposed to be better. But you want to know what happens when a league, when a country, when its players get so arrogant to the point that they don't think they no longer have to participate and represent our country? This is what happens. You lose for the first time ever to a country that doesn't have the same talent that you, that even if you win, you shouldn't be winning by just 3 points. You know what I mean? Let alone losing by 3 points. And let's be honest. You got guys like Harrison Barnes. You got guys like Jaylen Brown, Chris Middleton.
Mason Plumlee is on his roster.
Well, no, I didn't even get to him yet. I'm talking about guys that are good players, but good supporting players on good teams. Then you have the guys that you want to be superstars on this team, like Donovan Mitchell, help me out. What's the other cat from
Kemba Walker?
Kemba Walker, right? Jason Tatum. These are guys now that we want to push as the next wave of superstars, which, you know, I don't know how you can push Kemba. He's already 30 years old. But these are not guys that won in the NBA yet. Kemba's never won anything. Kemba never made his Charlotte Hornets, you know, playoff contenders. So I don't understand how he's going to make a team USA, a country, title contenders. And then we get to the guys like Joe Harris. We get to the guys like Mason Plumlee, like guys like that, Derek White, where we're saying, wait a minute. What are you guys even doing sniffing this roster? You guys shouldn't even be trying out for this team.
Facts, I'm sitting here shaking facts. My head as you named them dudes.
No, I'm just saying, now we're talking about guys that are number 9, 10, and 11 in a rotation on their own teams in the NBA. What are they doing as men 13, 14, and 15 on this roster? I have Brooke Lopez. You know what I mean? Talk to me, man. Like, is it superstar? Is it arrogance? Is it they think they're just better than this? I mean, I've already played and done this way too many. You know what I mean? Way too many times. What is it? If you're still one of the best in the NBA, then shouldn't you be representing your country, regardless of your age and how many times you've done it?
I agree. And this loss occurred 2 days after Team USA beat the same Australian team 102-86, Matt Mike. They also defeated Spain, who have the fourth best odds to win the tournament. They beat them 90-81. Patty Mills scored 10 points for Australia. He plays for Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs and was the leading scorer for Australia with 30 points. Patty Mills, Matt Mike, 30 points. All right, Utah Jazz player Joe Ingles scored 15 and has 7 assists. Listen to the players I'm naming. And Kemba Walker led the American squad with 22 points. And a lot of people felt that this loss would be a good teaching tool to move forward. Even Coach Popovich, Matt Mike. And look, even with this loss, Matt Mike, the USA men's basketball team is still a favorite going into the 2019 FIBA Basketball World Cup in China. But however, The loss to a lackluster Australian team also suggests that a gold medal isn't a lot compared to previous years, along with the players that's on this roster. They have one more final, they have a final exhibition game, all right, and that's Monday, that's later on tonight against Canada. And once the USA gets to Shanghai, all right, it's the first three World Cup games, shouldn't be overtaxing, all right? They got Turkey, the Czech Republic, and Japan, who respectively are ranked 17th, 24th, and 48th. But I can see this team losing.
They won't lose to those three. But
no, they won't lose to those guys.
Once they start getting into the...
Yeah. And then not only that, when you see a team like Australia beat them, then what do you think that's doing for the swag of all the other teams like Spain? Oh, Australia knocked these dudes off? Almighty USA is not so almighty. Maybe we got some kryptonite in our bag for them.
Yeah.
Why all these players are turning down to represent their country? I wish I really knew, man, Mike. I wish I knew. Not just because they want to get ready for the NBA season.
It's nothing special about it anymore. Listen, there's if we win, we're supposed to win. And if we lose, I don't want the stain of being that guy that lost on me. You know what I mean? So it's you remember the last time they lost, I believe it was Larry Brown. And Larry Brown, he just had such a it was a bad team, man. It really was. It was a poorly constructed team. And that was at a point where everybody knew Larry Brown. He hated to play the young kids. He just didn't like the way the game was going. And remember, he refused to play Carmelo Anthony, refused to play LeBron James and those guys. And this team ended up losing to, like, Puerto Rico, and then they lost to – you remember, they got blown out by Puerto Rico and then Carlos Arroyo, and then they got smoked in the tournament. I think they ended the tournament with, like, three losses.
I mean, I really hate
just,
to get
into this, but
did you think that these players could be backing out because of President Donald Trump? I mean, that may be a far reach, but I'm just saying that's a possibility.
I never considered that because I just look at it from a strictly financial standpoint of it. But, you know, I never thought about that yet. You know, not for nothing, but. Maybe wearing USA across their chest right now doesn't have the same meaning to them with him in office. And, you know, I never, ever even considered it. But, wow. How about that?
And how much did, you know, sock it to him? Which, look, it ain't going to – he's probably going to make an idiotic comment or whatever the case may be. But that's some food for thought, listeners.
No, I don't think he will simply because that's not something that anybody has made public. Like, I don't want to represent this country because of the man in office. Like, no one has gone public with that. So I don't think you'll hear anything from him. But thinking about it now, I kind of wish they all went and played in this tournament now, because I'd love to see what would happen if there would be some kind of reaction had they won it and got office to visit the White House.
Yeah, well... I mean, we'll see what happens with USA basketball team. We'll keep you posted with that, listeners. But moving forward, let's talk some baseball. As the New York Mets' magical run, their grind, came to a halt after the Braves swept them out of MetLife Stadium. All right, and it's a good news, bad news proposition for the Mets. They finished the season with three games against the Braves of Citi Field, Matt Mike. They finished off the season. All right. By then, there's a strong chance the Braves won't be playing for anything and resting their players for the postseason. So that can sound appealing for a Mets team that may need those games for a potential wild card berth. On the flip side, though, the Braves own the Mets this season. Own them. And on Sunday, the Mets couldn't touch Dallas Keuchel. They lost 2-1. And the Braves completed a three-game sweep and victories in 11 of the past 14 meetings against the Mets. And the Mets is 67-63. They hadn't lost three straight home games on the same home stand since April. But now they got to recover, and they have the Cubs heading into town, man, Mike. And the Cubs begin the day 2 games ahead of the Mets for the second wild card spot. The Mets lineup was just listless until the ninth when Pete Alonso doubled and J.D. Davis singled him to third with one out.
But only and it wasn't one even score. A booming, man. It was an oops double. But it kind of lit a spark under the team in the ninth inning. But, you know, Atlanta's still searching. Look, you hear the Mets say it all the time. Mets fans talk about their bullpen. I'm going to tell you right now, if Atlanta had a bullpen and a closer, a legitimate bullpen and closer, this team would be the best team in baseball. I'm saying it right now. They have 80 wins. They're 4 games behind the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Astros for best record in baseball. And we're talking about a team, you saw it yesterday, they've been searching. I mean, they traded for Mark Melanson and Shane Green. And Mark Melanson wasn't even the closer at the deadline. Shane Green was the closer. He's been so bad for them after the trade. You know, former Yankee farmhand. I believe Shane Green actually got traded to Didi Gregorius. Go figure that one. But it's like they'd be the best team in baseball. You know, their bullpen has been just as bad. They haven't had a solid production out of their closer role. So to me, I wasn't shocked that the Mets got swept. I wasn't shocked that, you know, Atlanta has some of the best young bats and arms in baseball. You want to talk about a team that's done it correct. Atlanta is the model, in my opinion.
What, man, Mike, these are the teams that the Mets need to beat. You know, so
they just finished sweeping the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, no, that was impressive. That was impressive. I wasn't expecting them to sweep Cleveland, but for whatever reason, the Mets get up against teams like that. They get up against it. Listen, Dallas Keuchel frustrated the Mets. Seven shutout innings. He allowed 4 hits and walked 3. 7 strikeouts. All right, the lefty pitched 6 shutout innings against the Mets on August 14th in Atlanta. And Steven Matz gave the Mets a 4th straight. Listen, Steven Matz pitched well, man, Mike. Allowing 1 run on 2 hits over 6 innings. He has 6 strikeouts and 1 walk. I don't know. Yeah. Listen, when you look at this Mets lineup, obviously, Pete Alonso is having a really good season, and Jeff McNeil was having a really good season. But if you remove those two guys from the equation, they've just been playing real solid team baseball. And those are the only two guys who have consistently hit well or hit the ball, if you want to, so to speak, the entire season.
Well, you know, not for nothing, the Mets actually have the offensive approach that I absolutely love. They have the offensive approach that I've been dying for the Yankees to go back to and adapt. These guys just hit the pitch where it's thrown. There's no more trying to bomb home runs. There's no more. It's just a matter, even in this day and age where home runs are going out of the park at record levels, which is something I actually want to talk about with Ronald Acuna for, you know, after. But they're just hitting the ball. You know, you see Wilson Ramos. Wilson Ramos is hitting 270. This is exactly what Gary Sanchez should be hitting. But you want to know the difference is Gary Sanchez has too much launch angle on his swing. And he's trying to pull everything and hit a home run because that's what the Yankees want. Well, Wilson Ramos is like, you know what, man? I'm going to get my 80 RBIs anyway. What would you prefer, a 220 hitting catcher with 80 RBIs or a 270 hitting catcher with 80 RBIs? Because if Gary's going to get to 280, imagine what he would do if they go back to the line drive approach. He'd have 20 home runs and 110 RBIs. And me and you would be like, oh, man, like, this guy's better than Jorge Posada ever was. But
he got up yesterday, Mad Mike, and I knew he was going to strike out. I knew it.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is that the Mets have tweaked their approach offensively, and it's working. And I think that just because they tweaked their approach offensively, they're going to be able to survive losing guys like Jeff McNeil and Cano, and if anybody else goes down, you know, it's work. It's revived guys like Amed Rosario and Wilson Ramos, actually, who was really struggling early on this year. That tweak in the approach has turned these guys into effective MLB offensive ball players. It's been amazing. And what I want to say about Ronald Acuña was he just became the second youngest 30-30 player in baseball history. The only other guy that hit 30-30 before he was 23 years old was Mike Trout. And baseball has a problem because Fernando Tatis Jr. as a rookie was going to be a 30-30 guy. To say this year we almost had two guys do something that's only been done once in baseball history. And to say that they were going to do it twice in the same season, baseball's got a problem, man. And I was going to save my rant for later, but I'm tired of seeing this crap. Like, I almost cursed this now. I'm tired of seeing it, man. Stop playing me for a fool. You want me to believe Pete Alonso is going to crush the all-time home run record for a rookie? You want me to believe that this is the best rookie we've ever seen? The best offensive hitting rookie we've ever seen? Give me a break, man. Give me a break. It's just a year and a half ago, Sandy Alderson was saying he's not ready. He's not ready. All of a sudden, he's the greatest thing we've ever seen offensively. We're talking about this kid is going to put to shame Aaron Judge's rookie season. And we were over here saying, damn, we've never seen a season like that. And even then, we didn't know if it was. I don't know, man. I'm so sick of it. I don't know how you feel about it, but these things don't happen. There's reasons why these things were. It happened the first time in history, 7 years ago or whatever it was. Now all of a sudden it happens. It's going to happen twice in the same year. Come on, man.
I agree. Baseball does have a problem on their hands, and they're saying that the ball is not juiced, and there's nothing like that. But there's been home runs being hit at an alarming rate, and like you said, not to diminish, Alonso as a ball player because he's having a really good season. But like you said, when you compare him to rookies in Major League Baseball history, some of the greats, no way at all. But let's talk about the Yankees, Mad Mike. And there was a play that happened Saturday at Dodger Stadium, and the Dodgers outlasted the Yankees. It was a good game in the second game of their three-game set. All right, they won that game 2-1. But here's the scenario. The Yankees loaded the bases with one out, all right, against Kenley Jansen in the ninth inning. And they were unable to push across the time run because Sanchez struck out with the bases loaded. But that ninth inning rally featured some controversy with runners on first and second with one out. All right, Gio Urshela hit what looked like a potential game-ending 5-4-3 double play. But Brett Gardner broke it up and slid into second base. The slide was clean. Gardner slid right into the bag. And in fact, the replay showed that Gardner was safe because he beat the throw. Now, Gleyber Torres, who was on third base, all right, he scampered home from third to score the tying run after Max Muncy went down on a takeout slide. The Yankees had tied the game, and Jansen had blown his third consecutive save opportunity, or at least that's what everyone thought. That's what I thought. Long story short, replay showed Gardner beat the throw to second. Torres was sent back to third because home plate umpire Gabe Morales called time. And the replay showed Morales called time when Torres, a little less than halfway to home plate, scored. And that play to second is not in question here, all right? Replays make it clear Gardner not only slid directly into the bag, thus satisfying that second base collision safety rule, he also beat the throw and was safe on the play. The controversy is Morales' grand time as Torres was heading home, man, Mike. How? Listen, umpires, I don't get it, man, Mike. I don't get it. How umpires can always, not always, let me not say always, but these guys are screwing up. They're screwing up.
Well, here's one thing, right? The one thing at a time, the play. If Brett Gardner slides in and he's safe, Max Muncy knows. Max Muncy's on the bag. You know what I mean? He's holding the bag. He knows if Brett Gardner's safe or not, right? At second base. He can feel him coming to the bag at the same time he can feel himself catching the ball. Max Muncy, you can't do what... You do exactly what Max Muncy did. He did the right thing, right? He knows the guy's safe on a close play, on a hard slide, so he fakes injury, right? If you're the umpire, injuries happen. You don't call timeout as soon as a bang bang play happens. You got to let the entire play. You got to know who's on base. You got to know where the runners are. The second base umpire doesn't call timeout. The home plate umpire doesn't call timeout. You understand? He called, and correct me if I'm wrong. The home plate umpire said he called timeout because of the collision at second base and the injury. That's not his place to call it. His eye is supposed to be on the man at third base. And if the man at third base is not standing on third base, if he's rounding third base with the opportunity to score home, but he has to let the play continue, right? The fact that he called timeout and specifically called it because of second base, that was mistake number one, fans, because that's not his play. That's not his bag. So he shouldn't even never had an eye on that. And if he had an eye on that, that tells me that he was never paying attention to Gleyber Torres at third base. So you want the Yankees to stop arguing with umpires? You want them to stop flipping out? Umpires need to start doing a better job with the Yankees on all facets of the game.
At best, Mad Mike, at best, Morales granted Tom very late. Like you said, Muncy was down before Torres started home, and Tom was not granted until he was halfway to the plate. Now, can you call Tom when an outfielder hits the wall and prevented the runner from taking an extra base? No. You don't grant Tom then because the play is still live. Even when pitches are hit by dangerous comebacks, you know what I'm saying? The play is still played until completion. The play is still live.
Yeah, not only that, what Dodger asked for timeout? No Dodger asked for timeout.
No.
That was the other part of the problem. The Dodgers did not call timeout in the field. He admitted it after the game, Mike.
But by the time he asked for it, Gleyber Torres was already in there. He was already in motion. He was halfway to home plate.
But that's my point. That's exactly my point. And if the home plate umpire is the guy looking at Kenley Jansen to grant the timeout, then he's not looking at where the base runner is at third base. You can't do both. That's what I'm saying. You can't tell me if the home plate umpire is looking at Kenley Jansen to give Kenley Jansen the timeout, he's not looking at the runner on third. How can he say where the runner on third was and what his actions were? He can't. He can't tell it to you with straight face and you not know he's lying. This is exactly what man, I'm telling you, you brought up all the things that I wanted to rant about today. I'm tired of baseball treating me like an idiot. I'm tired of baseball looking at me in the face and telling me lie after lie after lie and questioning my common sense. The Yankees should have tied that game.
Yeah.
And Kenley Jansen should have been, they should have been first and second, and Kenley Jansen should have blown the lead. It should have been 2-2 with a man on first and second.
And the Yankees ended up having the bases loaded with one out following this chaotic play, and they were unable to capitalize. He struck out Mike Tauchman and Gary Sanchez to end the game. And the Yankees still had an opportunity to tie the game and even take the lead following a controversy play, but weren't able to take advantage. But umpires should not dictate the outcome of baseball.
You know how that goes.
Mike.
You know how those plays are. Those plays are just... They deflate everything. You put all your energy into that.
On no level of baseball should an umpire dictate the outcome of games.
But they have been.
You're right. That's the part that's alarming. Now I have
and
my
then,
play
and then even then, listen, but I go even further. Why was Angel, when the three of them were ejected last weekend, why was the first base coach looking in the dugout? Why is the first base coach, he's not the one calling balls and strikes. Why is he throwing anybody out from the dugout at first base? Tell me.
Yeah.
They're not arguing to call that first base. They're not badgering him. Why is he throwing anybody out? He shouldn't be throwing anybody out. But you want to know what? That's the other part of the problem. Joe Torre. Joe Torre is a punk, man. We saw it at the end of his tenure here. Joe Torre's a problem. Do you trust Joe Torre to fix situations? Do you trust Joe Torre to say the right things? He came out of that modest Yankees. I mean, listen, over the last 3 years, no one's had more balls called a strike on him than Aaron Judge. When you want to, well, I heard Chris Carlin, you know, really, really destroying Cameron Maybin last Monday on the radio. Cameron Maybin got thrown out over a ball that was called a strike that was a ball. It doesn't matter how close it is. You want to tell me that ball is too close to take? Fine. But you want to know what? I rely on an umpire to get his calls correct. And the umpire ended up throwing out three guys on strike three call that was a ball. Wipe your hands clean of it. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how close that pitch was. These umpires have it out. And here's what I say. You want them to stop bitching. You want them to stop complaining. You want them to stop intimidating umpires. Then get the calls right. Okay. Get them right. And then show the world we're getting them right, and they're still arguing with us. Because in the end of the day, I don't know how you feel, but I'm not going to be pissed at Brett Garner or CeCe Sabathia or Aaron Boone or Cameron Maybin when they have a point.
Yeah. Not only that, man, Mike, they also have the batter zone. And MLB think that that's such a cool thing at Denver. All you're doing is you're showing that umpires are awful. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen balls called strikes that don't land in that box. And sometimes balls that land in that box are called balls. When there's strikes.
Yeah, 100%.
I was watching real quick before we go to a break. I was watching something on HBO Sports maybe about a year or two ago, man, Mike. And I don't know if I talked about this on the show before, but they have a device where there's a machine up in the booth or whatever the case may be, gotta let the umpires know what's the ball and what's the strike.
And maybe they're already using it again, boy. And internationally, they've already rolled it out, the robo arms.
But you know, baseball is not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole, man, Mike.
Yeah, they, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly they are. They are considering it. It's been rolled out. And then that's why I'm talking about the umpires. You guys got real problems, man. You got real problems because you made enemies. You've got umpires that are grandstanding. You got umpires that have done public interviews with like Joe West doing and saying, you know, there's certain games where you make the wrong call, you know, you make the wrong call to move it along, like because you don't want to be part of a 4-hour Yankee Red Sox game. You got umpires that actually say these things. We know that you're doing this, but you got guys that have actually said it already. It's coming, man. It's coming, and then what are they gonna do? You already got replay, which I still think is being used incorrectly, if you ask me. But that's a debate for another day. But you already got replay showing how many calls they get wrong. Now you're gonna get a robo ump in here. It's like I don't get it, man. I don't get it, and I really am tired of it.
And Major League, the current umpires, they're not doing anything to say that we don't, you know, that system doesn't need to be implemented. They're not doing anything to do otherwise.
You'll hear it. Everyone is listen. If players are. If umpires are not enforcing the rules, like you have to throw a pitch within 10 seconds, and you have all these things that they're not. If they're not going to do those things, and I get what they're saying, well, I can't do anything if he steps off the mound or he can't agree on what pitch to throw. And I get it. I get the arguments, but you know, calling balls and strikes is not your only. It's not your only job. So start doing all of your job, because if you're not doing your job, then once again, Lloyd, why do we have them? I can get a machine. You can probably just put a sensor on a plate that'll just basically beep for, you know, we see it all the time, right? If it crosses the plate at a specific height and on the corners, the plate will turn green. And if it doesn't, it'll turn red. We'll know right then and there, strike or ball. Like, I mean, you have a home plate umpire just to make, you know, safe and out calls at home plate. Yeah, and we're getting there.
The technology is in place to have that done. It is. It's in place to have it done, man, Mike. But like
so
you said, that's something we'll probably touch up on again, because it's getting worse and worse. It's not getting any better. It's not. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to talk more football with the Lord A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lord A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listen, it's the first half of the show. We talk USA men's basketball. Are they in trouble? Me and Mad Mike seem to think that they are. All right? We talked a little bit of baseball as the Mets got swept by the Braves. The Yankees are battling. They're only 8 games up on the Tampa Bay Rays. And we talked to umpires being awful. And something needs to be done. Major League Baseball needs to do something about that. But let's talk some football, Mad Mike. And let's talk about one by the name of Mr. Andrew Luck, who suddenly retired from football. All right? And to watch Andrew Luck speak Saturday night, it was a shock. He's 29 years old. All right? And he's leaving football because football has basically ground him down. All right? Like so many who played, including myself, Luck was one of the best quarterbacks and had given football a good deal of his physical well-being, man, Mike. All right, and listen to this, listeners. Luck, over the 6 seasons of his pro career, he suffered torn cartilage in 2 ribs, a partially torn abdomen, a lacerated kidney, at least 1 concussion, a torn labrum in his throwing shoulder, and most recently, a calf and ankle injury, which kept him out of the team's preseason action. And it was a health inventory. It was a hellish inventory. But the medical particulars were just a part of it. Luck had also grown overwhelmed by the soul of the injuries, the rehabilitation, the process of recovering from the pain, or at least recovering from enough pain to go out there and risk damaging it again. And he began that awful mentality draining spot before, all right, and it had him, it made him miserable. He said it, and back then it almost made him quit. And he didn't want to go there again. But with what we know about football, man, Mike, and what we continue to learn, it's hard to argue with the long-term wisdom of Luck's choice. And you see so many other players retiring from football at early ages. And football conditions, listen, it's audience to expect cartoonist warriors lifting broken bodies and brains off the turf, so to speak. But what Luck is doing here is the rational move, in my opinion. And this is coming from somebody who played 10 years of semi-pro football, suffered more than 10 concussions, and have injuries from top to bottom. Top to bottom. My body is a caca show, and I was going to let it fly, but I cursed too much last week. And Andrew Luck knows all the stories of retired players living in physical and mental anguish. As a son of an NFL quarterback, he probably knows more than we do. And he could not predict what football would do to him next. So he's walking away for it before any more can happen. Listen, as I wake up with headaches every morning, bright lights bother me. I feel nauseous sometimes. And I just play semi-pro football. Semi-pro football. So imagine what these dudes are going through. Imagine what they're going through. And listen, I mean, football is also giving Luck a great deal. All right, he was the number 1 pick. He made close to $100 million over the course of his career. And he's leaving many millions behind, you know. And it will surely be those who fault him for not delivering on an early promise. Congrats. Listen, he's a solid quarterback. Solid quarterback. I respect his decision, man, Mike. You got any thoughts on this?
Well, I'll say this. For anybody that had any held any ill will towards him for making this decision, I'm not going to admonish those people. I do understand, because the first thing that went through my mind when I heard it, I was like, damn, week three of the preseason is a dress rehearsal for the regular season. You wait till now to tell your team that you're going to be tired. I mean, who's had worse? In my first, my first reaction, you know, who's had worse luck than Chris Ballard after he took this job? When you think about it, like, it's just been crazy. It's been one hit after another. It's been, you know, the coaching search, and now you're on the right path. Everybody thinks you're a Super Bowl contender, and your franchise quarterback retires. Or tells you he's going to retire right before game three of preseason. But then I started thinking about it, and you laid all these injuries out. You know, I started thinking about Ryan Grigson, who was the general manager in Luck's early years, who for some reason, every time somebody thought, you know, people think they're going to take a offensive lineman or they're going to sign an offensive lineman, and they're spending their money on Andre Johnson and then Frank Gore, guys that were past their prime that you know, did absolutely nothing to help protect Andrew Luck. They're drafting wide receivers. They're out of the league in a matter of, you know, 5 years. And then he's taken hit after hit, sacked 100 times in his first three seasons, misdiagnosed injuries. I mean, we're talking about a guy who, like you said, had a lacerated kidney, was pissing blood, and they're over here saying, oh, it's just a lower back contusion or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, think about these things. He didn't forget that all of his injuries came out worse. This injury now, you heard it was a calf strain in March or April. And he's still not recovered from a calf strain, which all of a sudden is now a high ankle problem. So did these guys misdiagnose him again? Does he just not trust the organization? What is it? Because in the end of the day, remember something. Andrew Luck, the Colts are not going after him for his money. He owes them money. I know you just said, hey, he's leaving $58 million on the table. He got paid his entire bonus already. He owes them money by not fulfilling this contract. You understand? They want to go after him. They can go after him and say, hey, you still have $20 million in bonus that you were paid out that you owe me now. Remember, the Atlanta Falcons fought Michael Vick in court for his bonus when he went to jail, and they won their money. So this is not personally, I think that they're not going after him because I think, one, either it was misdiagnosed and they realize that they'd lose in court, or like, hey, you know what I mean? He'll take them to court and say, you know, I don't know if you call it malpractice or whatever, but anyway, I think he's going to come back. I think he's going to take some time off. He's going to miss the game. He's going to heal up completely out of the without the pressure of the fans saying, when is he going to come back? When is he going to come back? You know, not putting a timeline on it. And I think you'll see him again. As a matter of fact, I think you'd see him as early as – I think you'd see them announce as early as this season that Andrew Luck has decided that he's going to play football in 2020.
Oh, I wouldn't be shocked. That's an interesting point, Mad Mike. Interesting point. Let's talk about New York Giants football, Mad Mike. The Giants fly back from their first road trip with another victory. Again, this is preseason, so I'm not making it seem like this is a Super Bowl contending team. Because they're not.
Tell their coach that. I'm tired of this guy. Well, yeah, tell him to shut his mouth. Tell him that.
They're totally not. And this is coming from a big Giants.
Shut your mouth.
And this team improved to 3-0 in the preseason with the 25-23 win over the Bengals. And they have the New England Patriots up next on Thursday. And obviously, the regulars are not going to play. All right? But look, I will say this. Daniel Jones showed his physical mental toughness. All right, the rookie quarterback knew his NFL debut, in which he felt was perfect, would not be indicative of the rest of his career. All right, and his second outing, he lost two fumbles, and his third, he took a big hit and lost the ball again. The Giants ended up recovering. In between, he dealt with some outside noise. Each time, he rebounded and showed his physical and mental toughness, which is one of the main reasons the Giants probably drafted him with the 6th overall pick in April. He entered Thursday night with the highest yard per catch average, all right, in passer rating among NFL quarterbacks who had thrown more than 6 passes in the preseason. 9 of 11 for 141 against Cincinnati. Again, listeners, and Mad Mike, please don't beat me up for this because this is just preseason. Again, I'm not putting a Super Bowl contending crown on this football team because the Giants are going to have at least a top 8 pick in next year's draft. At least a top 8 pick. All right, and the Giants I'm sorry, go ahead, man, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, I'm with you. The Giants have played one of the softest schedules in the league. They played some of the, I don't even know what else to say about it. Like, I don't even want to go at the kid. But this coach just pissed me off so much, man. He just pissed me off so much. Like, you didn't play against any ones. And the ones you did play against are some awful teams. And yeah, like Cincinnati.
The only They're not playing against New England ones. None of the starters are going to be playing in that game for the most part.
The Chicago Bears didn't start any starters. Their coach said, my starters are already set. I don't need to see what my starters can do. So he played his entire – he started the game with the bench players. Daniel Jones didn't see one starter until he played Cincinnati. Cincinnati's going to stink. There's already people that were saying, hey, maybe the Colts, if they want to contend this year, should trade for Andy Dalton. Because Cincinnati's going to be so bad. They already don't have A.J. Green. Their defense, they have no linebacking core. Remember, people thought that they were going to build the linebacking core in a draft. And they ignored that this draft.
They had Malauga. Is it Malauga?
Yeah.
And they had Dante Burfitt. They had one of the strongest linebacking cores in football at one point.
I'm sorry, you can keep going. I'm so sick of this coach, man.
The Giants got a good look at their entire roster.
14-31 coach.
But it's still too sloppy, man, Mike. They muffed a punt, 3 sacks, untimely drops. One that I saw by, what's his name, man, Mike, that came from Denver?
Corey Lattimore?
Yeah, he dropped a touchdown pass on the first drive. Five accepted penalties?
Yeah,
and this
that's
guy
the thing.
The coach thinks that this is a Super Bowl contending team.
But that's the whole thing. He wants, because he's now going to Daniel Jones. The hype now the hype in New York is crazy, right? For Daniel Jones, so now he's going to live off that to make everybody forget about the things that you just pointed out.
Look, I mean, it was good to see Evan Ingram play. It was good to see Darius Slayton play. They both dealt with hamstring injuries early this year, and they hadn't played until Thursday night. So it was good to see that, Mad Mike. But this is not a good football team, listeners. Your defense is terrible. They have, in my opinion, we talk about Cincinnati's linebacking core being pretty bad. Well, the Giants' linebacking core is not that much better than Cincinnati's. Again, I hate to sound like a broken record. They don't have the right personnel to play a damn 3-4 defense. They don't have it. They don't have it.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And I will say that Eli probably, obviously, I think he had his final tune-up before week one. And he had one series of the game, and he led a 15-play, 66-yard drive. It resulted in a 41-yard field goal, but they should have scored a touchdown. He completed 4-8 passes, 41 yards, 19-yard slant to Russell Shepard. And it followed up a flawless performance the week before when he completed all 4 of his passes, including a touchdown. And again, like Mad Mike said, it was against nobody. But you got to take the positive out of this, and they go up against the Dallas Cowboys week one. It could be ugly. I'm kind of expecting it to be ugly.
And, you know, not for nothing, that's the other thing that no one's talking about. Like, everyone is talking about how efficient one. Let's be honest, Lloyd. I watch these games, and we can say whatever we want. Daniel Jones is just like Eli Manning. He is living underneath. You know what I mean? He's all these throws are short throws. He's hitting guys, you know, and you say whatever. That's the offense. He's hitting guys on a 5-yard slant route, and they're going for 15, 18 because of bad tackling. That's not going to happen in the regular season. You're not going to constantly beat guys on those shifts. Yeah, you know, not on the shift. I'll say it. Like on those defensive shifts where guys don't know that, you know, secondaries don't know on the second and third team defenses who's supposed to be picking up on the switch and who's shifting, who's going into motion with the slot guy and those kind of things. None of these things are going to happen. You're going to see it. They're going to put eight in a box, and they're going to say, we know that you're not going to go deep, and we're going to have our safeties up, and we're going to dare you to try to throw these 5-yard passes all game long, and we're going to dare you to hand off Saquon Barkley. It looks good now in preseason. But you know, like I know, that you think that these routes are going to work when you have those middle linebackers of the Dallas Cowboys, or when you have those safeties and those cornerbacks and that defensive line of the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, again, they didn't play against anybody in the preseason, listeners, and Mad Mike is absolutely right. But I got to say the pass rush came on strong again. And during the first game of the preseason, including myself, I was quick to point out that the defense had zero sacks against the Jets. And I changed the following week. O'Shane Zimenez, Marcus Golden, Olsen Pierre, all newcomers on the team, each got to the quarterback. And then the Giants upped that. You know, they upped that total on Thursday night, including two more from Zimenez, Joshua Tuefua, who led the team with 8 tackles. Sean Chandler, Keon Adams accounted for the other 3 sacks. These aren't players that's actually going to be starting. Maybe Zimenez. The other guys that I named, they're probably not even going to see any burn, Matt Mike, unless there's injuries. Where's sacks from B.J. Hill? Where's sacks from Destin Lawrence? Where's sacks from Tomlinson? Where's sacks from Carter? Ogletree? Marcus Golden and Zimenez are the only two guys out of the front 7 that I'm naming that has sacks. That's going to get substantial burn during the season.
I'm happy you're saying this because this has been my argument the whole time. At what point this preseason have the Giants look good against the other team's first team? Let's be honest, because the Jets first team 3 and out on offense, and then you had the New York Jets offense 6 plays touchdown, not field goal touchdown, first team offense. And then talk to me, man. Talk to me.
Cincinnati and Cincinnati are bums. I think the power ranking, they had them at the bottom tier of the power rank. Well, the Giants were at the bottom tier also, rightfully so. This is a bad football team. Bad football team. I do think they got better on the offensive line. But they have no receiving core, Matt Mike. Obviously, he's losing Odell Beckham Jr. hurt. They didn't replace. They replaced him with Golden Tate, and he's serving a 4-game suspension for violating the drug program, the NFL drug program. So now your best receiver is Sterling Shepard, and then you don't go out and you don't sign anybody else. Their receiving core, they have a bunch of misfits. And you think you're going to win a Super Bowl with a bunch of misfits?
But that's what I'm talking about, man. You want to talk about the critics of Daniel Jones. He's deflecting. Come on, man. Let's talk about the critics of Daniel Jones. You ain't proven wrong yet. What has Daniel Jones done in a regular season that proves those people wrong? keeping it real. What has he done? Nothing? Oh, yeah, he's done nothing.
Listen, Mad Mike, correct. I'm going into this Giants season just like I went into the Knicks season last year. I wasn't expecting much from the Knicks. So when I watched every damn game and they would get their brains beaten for the most part, I would be a little upset, but not as upset if I was to be, not upset as I would have been if I had any type of expectations for them. And that's exactly going to be my approach with the Giants. Week in and week out, I'm going to watch the television and expect them to get their brains beat in.
Well, tell that coach that. All these, Daniel Jones can start week one. He's shown us enough. He can start week one, and we can win games. Shut up.
Listen, can we just move on to a more relevant team right now? And it's, you know, it's not, it's killing me to say it, but facts is facts. All right, listen, the Jets, man, they may not have finished their preseason on Saturday night as they have one more game to go, but the starters did. And I don't think the first team stars will see any field time during next week's preseason final against the Eagles. So this 28-13 loss against the Saints that they had was the last time that we'll see those players on the field for 15 days. And the next time it'd be against week one where the Jets open up against the Buffalo Bills. All right, and Sam Darnold, he's going to be sore, Mad Mike. And the Jets can count this preseason as a victory because Darnold escaped uninjured. But there had to be at least a few times, Mad Mike. I don't know about you, but I definitely was holding my breath. And the Jets offensive line, you know, was without three interior starters. And they were absolutely brutal in protection. And that lit the Saints tee off on Darnold several times. And that pressure clearly affected his ability to get much done on the first few drives. But he finally settled in a bit when it came into the second quarter, leading a touchdown drive. But the TD was far from the important part. The fact that Sam Darnold and the Jets escaped without any injuries was the big win for the Jets right there, Matt Mike. What's your thoughts on Darnold and his play in that offensive line play in that preseason game? Should they even have had him in there with, you know what I'm saying, with some starters out, Matt Mike? I don't know.
I'll lie to you if I said I didn't think the same way you just did. I was thinking like, hey man, three out of five. But at the same time, here's the thing, Lord. I think that with the recent moves of Joe Douglas, I do think that this is an 8-man deep line. I'm not saying that they're going to be the best line out there, but I do think that Jonathan Harrison, Alex Lewis, and I guess they want you to believe in guys like Tom Compton, but I think that this is going to be a solid line. So at some point, he's going to have to play behind some backups. You know, this is the NFL. There's always injuries. So, yeah, three of the five, it did make me nervous, but he came out of it. There were some plays where I was just like, wow. His ability, Lloyd, to throw with his feet not set, his ability to throw offset, to throw off balance, to just, it is unbelievable. And he has some throws in Saturday night's game where he just wowed you. And actually, if we're being honest, he's just wowed us the entire preseason. You want to talk about Daniel Jones wowing us. We're talking about what Sam Darnold was able to do. You know, people don't know, Sam Darnold was younger than Daniel Jones. How about that? Not only that, but the defenses he played, you know, the Giants ones, he played Atlanta Falcons ones, and he played the Saints ones. The Falcons and the Saints have Super Bowl aspirations, not playoff aspirations, Super Bowl aspirations. And he did this. He went 17 for 25, 220 and two touchdowns in the preseason. He looks ready to me. These the weapons, the receivers are playing. It looks like they're all clicking. They're all on the same exact page. And not for nothing, and this is without Le'Veon Bell. What Sam was able to do without Le'Veon Bell, can you imagine when they come up to the line, and this is why people are talking about the tight end situation. I'm not worried about the tight end situation because here's the thing that the Jets can do that no other team can do, and this is real. I don't care how much you hate the Jets, how much you think Dan Mike doesn't know what he's talking about, he's just bigging up the Jets. The Jets are the only team in the league that can come and their starting running back and their backup running back can play wide receiver. And I'm not talking about play wide receiver, you know, as a fill-in. I'm talking about come in and play wide receiver. So what do? When Chris Herndon is there in the slot as a tight end, you got Robbie and Quincy on the outside. You got Crowder on the other in the other side as a slot. And then you're running split running back with Lev on one side and Ty on the other side. How do you defend that?
Yeah, listen, that's tough. I thought it was also smart to shorten the starter's night. Originally, Adam Gase said he planned on giving his starters one half. All right, with the chance for a little more after the break, after halftime. But that changed on the fly. And Donald and the offense getting pulled just before half. And most of the defense starters got the hook after four drives. Frankly, Donald probably should have come out even earlier. All right, we both agree that. But Gase was still wise to adjust, in my opinion, and get his guys out of there before pressing his luck too far. All right, he saw how the game was going and smartly decided to take a different approach. And I thought he already got burned once this summer with Avery Wilson injury. You know, good. I thought, listen, kudos to him for not getting sucked into that trap again.
Yeah, but you know what? It's funny. He did come out. He apologized. He took blame for it. But here's the thing, man. I don't know that we can blame him anymore. The Jets were aware that Brandon Copeland was going to be suspended. So now you start thinking, hey, man, Brandon Copeland plays on Avery Williamson's side, right? So I need to get other guys in there. I need to get him familiar with Neville Cute. I need to get him familiar with all these other guys that he's going to be playing. So, yeah, he was the only starter, but it kind of puts things into a little bit more perspective. I still think it was a mistake to do it. And as far as the Brandon Copeland suspension goes, someone needs to tell me. I just need more insight there, because he said that he had his the stuff that he was taking. He said he had that stuff verified. He said he didn't take anything that wasn't verified by the league. And that one of the supplements that they verified and that he took and was verified by the league contained a substance that was not on the bottle. How does he lose his appeal if you approved the substance he took?
It seems like nobody's winning appeals when it comes to that, man, Mike. But I agree
with
you.
But and once again, and I don't let me say, I don't want to play stupid here. I don't want to play naive. It's the NFL. Guys are taking stuff. I'm well aware guys are taking stuff. I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't want to be that guy. But, yeah, you know what I'm saying, man? It's just like, if he says it's verified, how is he getting suspended? How is he losing an appeal? If he has record that the league verified it, and if he produces record that the league verified the substance he took, then they just got to swallow it. You know what I mean? Right or wrong, they just got to take a loss and say, hey, he's not wrong.
That's the whole thing. The NFL don't want to take a loss in this, because if they take a loss in a situation like this, well, guess what, Matt Mike? They got a bunch more L's coming to them. And you know the NFL don't want that to happen. You know that.
You're not right. You're not wrong. But, I don't know, man.
Now, here's the thing, Matt Mike. Now, I'm going to attack this team. Okay, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because the Saints, like you said, among NFL's upper echelon of teams, all right? Obviously, there's a reason why this team made the NFC Championship game last season. But I felt that the Jets hadn't seen a team of that caliber yet. And, I it didn't make the jump. Oh, I didn't think they played that well against the team. Look, the Jets' starting defense, gave up 10 points in just four drives and allowed the Saints to score on each of their first two possessions. Drew Brees and the Saints starters only played one drive, and they scored a touchdown. Now, that's not a great look, in my opinion, for defensive coordinator Greg Williams and his unit. Obviously, the starter offense struggled to move the ball on the ground, and it took a while to get anything going. They did have three starters out, though, on the offensive line. All right, so it wasn't a total disaster, but it was clear that the Jets, you know, with a second-best team on the field early in that night, and they have a little bit ways to go before they catch up to the upper echelon in the NFL, Mad Mike.
Yeah, Yeah, but at the same time, Marcus May, one of your starting safeties, is playing in his first game. He only played one series. And Tremaine Johnson, you're starting your I guess top cornerback. He's not playing at all. So it's kind of like, I mean, Michael Thomas was picking on Darrell Roberts. To me, Darrell Roberts isn't even a number two. I don't know what the Jets were thinking that he was a number two. I don't even think Darrell Roberts is number two, let alone a number one. And then Poole is a slot guy, and now Poole's playing on the outside. So that one injury has his secondary in all types of mess. So they stopped the run, which is what they're supposed to do up front. But they stopped the tight end, which is what they're supposed to do. But there was a throw in there in the first quarter where Drew Brees puts it up there to Michael Thomas, and Poole has to come down with the interception. He's there. Michael Thomas just takes the ball away from him, and that's the kind of problems that this defense is going to have until Tremaine Johnson can get back. You better hope that he's back and that hamstring is healthy, because this secondary is bad without him. With him and Marcus May, I think it changes.
Yeah, I got to give props to Taylor Bertlott, the Jets kicker. All right, he crushed field goals from 56 and 48 yards. He was 1-for-1 of PATs. So that could be big for you guys, man, because I think he's going to play a key role if he's the kicker for this team to the success of your team's season.
I don't think he's the kicker. I think the Jets are going to – listen, Joe Douglas was way too excited on Saturday night about cut-down day. And what that tells me is he knows there's a lot of guys that are out there that he's got his eye on, man. There's a lot of guys he's got his eye on. There's a lot of guys that he probably believes in that will make this team deeper. And a lot of guys that are on his roster that he doesn't necessarily believe in. I can see him doing what Dave Gettleman did. Remember what Dave Gettleman did last year where he went and he was wrong about it, where he just was cutting guys left and right and picking up other guys. It seemed like he didn't have a plan. Well, it seemed like Dave Gettleman didn't have a plan because Dave Gettleman ran their entire offseason last year. And then, why are you cutting 10 guys that you brought in here? You know what I mean? He didn't cut Jerry Reese guys. And then, like I said, when you look at the guys that he cut, they went and made impact somewhere else. I think Joe Douglas has a plan. I don't think Taylor Bertolette is part of it. I don't think there's a lot of guys that are part of it. I think he's looking at some of these veteran cuts that just still have $15 million in cap space. And to my understanding, the Jets are serious about adding Jadeveon Clowney, breaking it here. There's serious talks about the Jets making a run at Jadeveon Clowney, and they have the money to lock him up.
Here's another reason why I think that they need to shorten the damn preseasons, Mad Mike, the NFL preseasons. And the Saints selected to play Drew Brees and their starters for just one series. And that's adding yet another team to the list of those severely limiting their starters during the preseason. I remember at some point a few years ago, Mad Mike, you at least get a preseason game where you would see the starters play at least into the third quarter. And that game lasted
Lloyd, is not that. The problem is that they're not giving discounted prices. They charge you the same amount for an NFL regular season game as they do for an NFL preseason game. That's the problem. The calls for them to shorten the preseason is because fans are tired of being done exactly like you just said. Like, if I gotta pay full price, I want to see a solid product. I'm gonna come in here, watch Eli Manning get sacked twice and throw a 5 yard underneath, and then I'm not gonna see Eli Manning again. I don't wanna see that. I'm gonna watch Sam Darnold go six plays
throughout the league, Matt Mike, where the stadiums are empty for the most part. And that game lasted about 3.5 hours, 31 penalties, 28 incompletions. That totally slowed the game down to an absolute snail's pace. All of that combined with a second half full of third and nobodies made this game entirely unwatchable, but I had to watch it to get information so we can discuss it on our show. All right, and a years-long push to abbreviate the NFL preseason has been picking up steam this summer. But like you said, it's all about that moolah. the almighty dollar. And the NFL don't want that to go out their pocket. They don't want it. They need that. They need every bit of it. Every bit of it.
Yep.
I've watched just about every preseason game, man, Mike, the first 3 weeks. And there's not one game outside of Jets and Giants games that I watched until completion. After watching the starters, I deleted the game from off the my DVR. There's no other reason for me to watch football. None. Outside of it being football. The first week, yeah, I was excited. It was football. So I was trying to watch as much of it as I can. And even then, I wasn't even watching. I the only full games. And this is the third week. We've completed 3 weeks of preseason football. I've only watched the Jets and Giants games. And even then, I didn't even want to watch the entire game. The only reason why I forced myself to was so me and Mad Mike could give you information on these games and these teams. I wanted to jump out of the damn window, Mad Mike. It's awful.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the only team I've watched in full are my New York Jets, and obviously rooting interest. You want to see if a guy like Trent Cannon can win. I'm watching a guy like Cannon, right? And Cannon is one of the elite gunners on his team, special teams. But obviously, he can't just do special teams. He's got to show that he's got some kind of offensive, potential to earn. So, you know, a spot on roster. So I'm watching a guy like him. I'm watching a guy like Greg Dortch, an elite kick returner that we haven't seen since the likes of Leon Washington. Yes, I know Andre Roberts was a Pro Bowler last year, but Andre Roberts is he's one of those steady. It was never spectacular. I'm talking about, you look at this kid's footwork. He looks like he was shot out of a cannon. He stops on a dime, jukes. It's something special to see. So I'm watching for things like that. I'm watching to see if Deontay Burnett can win. Being Sam's favorite receiver at USC and then being on this roster and actually catching some balls last year. This guy's another name. Nathan Shepard is people are saying that he's on the chopping block as a third-round pick a year ago. I'm looking to see that. I'm looking to see if Ja'Kai Polite is picking up on this hybrid outside linebacker role, which he's not. But outside of that, I don't care about other teams' backups. So you're right. I'm with you. I'm not watching anybody else after, the starters are out. I'm really not. I mean, and it pisses me off because I'm coming home, man. I'm coming home from a long day at work, a long day of watching sports, researching sports, and then I just want to relax and turn on the dumb box, just watch something and just veg out and be stupid for a minute, and I'm forced to watch these preseason games. And I'm like, yo, what happened to my channel? I don't want to watch this. I'm watching Fourth Stringer fight on Fox 5 at 11 p.m. Come on, man. Yeah. Like, give me some dumb sitcom right now.
Man, it is awful. It is awful.
But, I was watching the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'm just listening to the commentary. I'm listening to them talk about how this Fourth String running back might put Leonard Fournette on notice. And I'm like, really? We're now comparing, regardless of attitude, and we're now talking about a fourth-string running back is going to put Leonard Fournette out of Jacksonville? Like, that's what we're doing now to keep these teams relevant, these games relevant in the fourth quarter? Like, you want me to believe that this fourth-string running back is going to take Leonard Fournette's job? Shut up.
We'll see. But, listeners, I can't wait for the NFL season to start. I'm sure Matt Mike can't wait for the NFL season to start. And I'm sure you guys can't wait for the NFL season to start. But, Matt Mike, you got your rant in, right? I know you were saying you was throwing it in.
No, I got another one, man. I had a lot of guys I was upset with this week. I got some more for you if I got 2 seconds.
Listeners, it's that time that we all love. It's the time where we let Matt Mike give his opinion and his rant for the week. So, Matt Mike, of course, you can rant as much as you want to. What you got for us this week, brother?
Listen, Adam Schefter is the one that broke the Andrew Luck. Luck story. He knew Andrew Luck after the game on Saturday night was going to inform the locker room that he was choosing to retire. He was well aware of this. He was also aware that he was going to have a public press conference Sunday at 3 p.m. He knew all of this. And you know what he did? He broke the news during the game where before Andrew Luck was able to inform anybody about that story, about the news. You had fans wearing Andrew Luck jerseys in the stands, taking them off, throwing them at him, booze raining down on him. He did nothing wrong. And all because Adam Schefter has to be first to a story. And then Adam Schefter comes on, and this is why I'm ranting. This is why I'm upset. He comes on ESPN on Saturday night, and he's like, well, you know, these reports came out before he had a shot to tell his teammates. It caused an awkward situation in the stadium. You had to feel bad for the guy. Who broke the story? Adam Schefter. Why is Adam Schefter talking about reports that he knows nobody else put out there? I was watching the Jet game, and they were floored, the announcers. Nobody knew this was coming. He's the only one that knew it was coming, and he put the story out. Sam, you know, I've been sick of Adam Schefter since he did it to JPP. You know, there's a certain level of privacy, there's a certain level of decorum you got to have as a reporter. He lacks all of it. He put Andrew Luck, he put those fans, he did this. He put everybody in an awkward situation because he has to be the guy. When you tell the story of Andrew Luck's retirement, you're never going to be able to do it without Adam Schefter. And that's what he wanted. He's a selfish individual, and I'm tired of seeing him reporting on sports, man.
All right, there you have it, listeners. There's that rant. And it makes, listen, Mad Mike always comes correct when he does his rants. Always comes correct. With that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and the Mad Mike want to thank you, the listeners, for sticking with us, rocking out with us, and supporting us. Let's keep this thing going. Like I said, I say start spreading the news for a reason. Get the word out to your friends, your family, anybody that's a sports nut, even those that aren't. This is a show where they can learn about sports if they want to learn about sports. Spread that news, listeners. Spread it for us, baby. And we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going. So, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So, Ayo, let's roll, baby.
And just like that, much like my cup of coffee, this show is over, finished, finito, done, we're out of here. Thank y'all for listening. If you subscribed, much appreciated. If not, please do so, because brand new episodes drop every single Monday, and I would hate to see you miss something. LloydAThompson.com, part of MyFresh.com. Subscribe, follow, @LloydAThompson on Instagram and Twitter. We're out of here. Peace.